Humbert is a monster.
Yeah, absolute monster.
But he's my monster.
You can have him.
This podcast is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed.
I like movies with elves.
Spoiler warning for whatever is in the title of this episode.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the horrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible and all other major podcast apps.
Welcome to episode 79 of The Horror of Babylon, where we are discussing both film adaptations of Lolita, Daniel's fourth favorite book of all time. I am Ryan, and with me as always is Daniel. Say hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
And we want to say thank you to our patrons, Abigail, the First Breaker of Chains, Mama of Dragons, and...
Logan,
the full metal patron,
who was wearing our t-shirt at Friday Night Magic tonight.
And thank you to a place where you can play Friday Night Magic. They're doing their Lord of the Rings Friday Night pre-release right this minute. Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, or the Mall Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Of course, that's a time of recording, not time of airing. It will have been done. But you can say thank you to Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas, for all the various stuff that he throws money at.
Which Humbert is he?
All of them.
He's all the Humbert.
No, he's Book Humbert.
He's Humbert squared.
Honestly, if he's probably James Mason, because he doesn't have that like crazy inner dialogue.
This isn't related to Lolita, so I'm going to sidetrack you for exactly 1 second.
Mississippi.
God damn it. The official Sadako account posted something about Nicolas Cage today, and I had this like big brain realization. Nicolas Cage should be the Ryuji of the next American reboot.
I don't know.
Tell me that National Treasure energy isn't totally Ryuji.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I think I'd just rather it be a Japanese thing.
I would honestly like them to try to do like a closer book-accurate reboot.
I think culturally the story works very well with Japan.
It does.
Yeah, so... Okay, now we're done with the ring.
Yeah, for now.
For now. All right, trigger warning. Pedophilia, child abuse, rape, Stanley Kubrick, gaslighting, kidnapping.
Stanley Kubrick.
And our history with both Lolita films. I hadn't seen either of them until this. Your turn.
In 1997, the second Lolita film was released on Showtime, and I was watching it, meaning I saw this movie when I was 10 years old.
Fun.
And... My personality is starting to make a little more sense. It's like this podcast is me rediscovering all my childhood traumas.
Yep, and I'm discovering all my adult current day traumas. Namely, Lolita 1997.
The vampires are pure myth, superstition.
I may be able to bring you proof that the superstition of yesterday can become the scientific reality of today.
But first, we're going to talk about Lolita 1962. We're going to do background on it, some general discussion, and then we're going to do background on Lolita 97, and then general discuss that and kind of compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lolita 1962, the OG, directed by Stanley Kubrick, who you probably know from Full Metal Jacket, The Shining,
2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah. Lots of stuff. This film had a budget of $1.5 to $2 million and had a box office of $9.2 million, which is pretty decent.
Modicum success.
It's five times the budget, almost. Yeah it's yeah. pretty good. Kubrick said in an interview that he honestly wished that he would have dramatize the erotic aspect of Humber and Lolita's relationship more. And if he could do the film over, he would have done it much more like the novel. And then at a later point in 1972, he did another interview where he just basically regretted making the book and making the film and said if he had known that he was going to have so many issues with censorship, he just maybe would have not have made it at all. I can understand that being frustrating, but I think well, let's jump into discussion.
Yeah.
I think, to me, this is the most palatable version of this story. I wouldn't say that I'm a big fan of this movie, or I probably wouldn't even say I like it, but if I was forced to endure the story of Lolita, this movie would be my preference.
It's too watered down for me.
Yep.
Yep. I do think that it's interesting how much of a impact this movie has had. Just, like, if you hadn't read the book before, I know I sent you that Marilyn Manson song, Heart-Shaped Glasses.
Uh-huh.
Which is about this movie. And a lot of... There's book covers that have Lolita with, like, the heart-shaped glasses.
Yep.
There's people who use that as, like, shorthand for a young sexualized girl. It's not in the book. It started in this movie. She's wearing heart-shaped glasses, and it's on the poster. And so this movie's had a bigger impact on, I guess, the Lolita zeitgeist than one would imagine.
I actually missed that. I finished the movie, and I was like, where were the heart-shaped glasses? Yeah. And I had to go back and like, oh, it's when he first sees her.
Yeah.
I totally missed it.
It shows up one time, but for some reason, it's something that people remember about Lolita. Probably because it's on the poster.
I think it's also, like, that's the image in the movie where she is most sexualized.
It's not when she's getting a pedicure in the opening credits with the foot.
No.
Okay.
Not my opinion.
Okay. I guess it just depends on if you're a foot dude or not.
I am not.
Yeah.
I remember the pedicure towards the end of the movie. I don't remember a pedicure in the opening credits.
Yeah, and when the movie's starting, it's just her foot, and someone's, like, painting her nails and, like, just doing shit with her foot.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, did Quentin Tarantino direct this?
I think I've already blacked out huge parts of this movie.
Yeah.
James Mason was good.
James Mason was great.
I've loved him since I was a kid. He plays Captain Nemo in the Disney version of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea opposite Kirk Douglas, which is a movie I watched all the time as a kid. So his voice is super distinctive, and I recognized him, like, right away.
What did you think of the movie beginning with the book's ending?
Oh, with him killing
Claire Quilty. Like, he shows up in Claire Quilty's mansion. And
it was super... That scene was very annoying and took way too long to get to the point.
Yeah. Both of these movies put a much bigger emphasis on Claire Quilty than the novel does.
Yeah, but this one, he has a lot of screen time, and yeah. In the 97 one, he's very important, but he has almost no screen time.
He's, like, in the background.
Yeah, he's, like, Moriarty of Files.
And in this one, he's, like, an actual character. I don't know what they were going for with his personality, with all, like... It wasn't stuttering, but
he was, like,
rambling.
He was, like, the Haruhara Haruko of Kubrick movies. Like, he would not shut up. He was everywhere.
That's a reference.
Yeah. I mean, he got on my nerves the whole time. I feel like if they would have just slimmed him down, they could have... This movie is 2.5 hours long, which is way too long. I think they could have shortened it by 15, 20 minutes by just cutting some of his dialogue.
I love how he rambled at the police ball. I was like, what the fuck is going on? I think I was so dumbfounded by just... It's not a bad performance, but I'm like, this is a choice for this artsy fart. Because that's about all the book sells him as like this drug-addled... Because when, you know, Humber finds him, he's like high out of his skull.
Yeah, which he's drunk as a skunk when he finds him in this movie. Claire Quilty reminded me of, like, somebody from, like, a Laurel and Hardy or a Three Stooges film. Just that really fast, talking, quick, comedic, like, but very long-winded.
And, a very long-winded version of that.
Yeah, and he's not, unlike something like Laurel and Hardy or the Three Stooges, there's no chemistry between him and another person. It's just him talking and talking.
What did you think of Big Hayes?
She was fine.
Yeah.
She
played a much... I don't want to call it like a smaller role, than I was expecting, but like...
Charlotte was played by Shelley Winters, mm-hmm. and Claire Quilty was played by somebody.
Yeah, he's definitely a person.
Peter Sellers. Oh, I know him from something. I looked this up.
I recognized him from something, but I wasn't sure what.
I looked it up, and I already forgot.
Oh, the Flash trailer. I was going to go see that this weekend and ran out of time.
I was going to go see it last night, but Emma didn't want to see it. She's like, no, I don't want to see a DC movie. I'm like, okay. But normally I'm okay with seeing movies by myself, but not like a 2.5-hour superhero movie. I'm not.
Yeah, I'm trying to find time and people to go with.
Yeah, it's
but at hard. The same time, my martial arts instructor came in and said, it kind of reminded me of Thor: Love and Thunder, but maybe not as bad. And I was like, that doesn't sound great. I was like, that's still not like...
Not as bad as Thor: Love and Thunder. Oh, but along I'm going to run right out there and see it.
But along those lines, I was like, ugh.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very good.
And I've seen all the really bad CGI cameos, and the director's all like... Oh, no, it's supposed to look bad because that's how the Flash perceives things when he's moving so fast. I'm like, yeah, buddy, I'm sure that's the reason.
So I guess I haven't seen Peter Sellers in anything, but he's in like all of the old school Pink Panther movies. If anybody recognizes him, that may be where you've seen him from.
I have seen a decent amount of those, so that's probably what I saw him in.
He's in a lot of them.
Okay.
Charlotte was fine.
Yeah, she was fine. Was there anyone that you thought was, like, outright bad in the Kubrick movie?
If it was anybody, it was Claire Quilty. And I don't think it was a bad performance. I just
think it was a choice.
Yeah, it was a choice I didn't like. Like I said, it was just... He talked too much, and the movie would have been shorter without him. And I don't think 90% of what he said wasn't funny. The funniest thing that happened was when Humbert shot him through the painting. Which we'll compare that to Frank Langella running around with his penis flopping around and getting shot.
The original also played up like, I know you don't find it funny, but there's like black comedy aspects in the book.
Yeah.
And this movie played up like the comedic value, quotation marks, people can't see.
One of the reviews I looked at said that both movies like completely excised the black comedy.
I thought this one like amped it up. Like there was like legitimate slapstick moments in this movie.
Yeah, like there were amusing portions to it.
I think one of my favorite scenes was when he's in the bathtub and Humbert's in the bathtub and everyone's coming in to mourn his wife.
Yeah.
Oh, why don't you let me pay for the funeral? Yeah, that sounds swell. You can just tell how happy he actually is.
I thought he was in shock.
I thought he looked like, man, I just got away with everything.
I took that as he was literally in medical shock.
I took it as, man, I got away with everything. I don't know what to do now. Yeah. I thought it was really funny. I thought it was so funny the way that scene was played.
I mean, there were some things that were like chuckle-worthy, but I didn't really... I wasn't laughing during a lot of this movie. I honestly thought it was a little long and a little boring.
Do we have anything else to say on this version?
I guess we should probably talk about Sue Lyon as Lolita.
Oh, yeah, we skipped right over her.
She's a little important.
I guess.
I think she does a good job in her performance of reminding you here and there that she is a child. They do sexualize her in some ways. Obviously nowhere near compared to the 1997 movie. It is much more subdued than the second movie and the book, but she kind of walks a balance between acting like an adult and acting like a kid, which I guess is good and bad, because the more she acts like a kid, the more I'm creeped out. But it's good that she acts like a kid, because it reminds you that she is a fucking child and Humbert is a monster. Yeah, absolute monster.
But he's my monster.
You can have him. Okay, I did think it was kind of funny when he was in the kitchen rifling around through shit and yelling through the floor, it's part of a novel, I just use your Lowe's names for convenience.
He was so nervous.
I mean, wouldn't you be?
Yeah, that is, God. I'm trying to think of anything that's even, like, remotely... I mean, it's way worse, but it's like your wife just... You forgot to close your internet browser, and it's on, like, the weird porn you like, and your wife walked in.
Oh.
Not even, like, normal stuff, but, like, that secret stuff you wait until they're out of town to watch. What is that song that's playing throughout the entire movie on and off.
I don't know.
There is some, and it's been stuck in my head for days. It's like whenever he first sees her.
Lolita Yaya.
Yeah, I guess that has to. Wow, they just called it Lolita Yaya.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't picture it in my head.
It played so much, and now it's just all that I can hear.
Yeah, I'm going to have a rant about overplaying music later in a different movie we're discussing. Yeah. Not on this episode, on a different episode.
Oh, there's the hula hoop scene.
Yeah, totally. When he's sitting there in his robe, and like half naked under his robe, totally reminds me of Captain Picard on Risa, the pleasure planet.
Of course not for an underage girl.
Uh-huh.
But you secretly are trying to check somebody out. How do you do it?
Sunglasses,
okay.
The trick, you move your eyes, peripherals, but you don't move your neck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to get sunglasses.
Mm-hmm. Sunglasses.
Because I was sitting there watching of like, does anyone buy he's reading that book?
he's not as bad at it as Jeremy Irons is. Yeah. Jeremy Irons is just like...
Yeah, he did not hide it well. But I'm saying that's another scene that fucking cracked me up, and I don't know if it was supposed to, but he's just sitting there, and he's like... And then Charlotte comes out and takes a picture of him, and she's super oblivious.
Yeah.
Both of these movies, though, made me understand, like, his hatred for her French. It's like somebody learns, like, one or two words and just peppers it in.
No, I take it as, like, as, like, a weeb, like, just saying,
yeah,
like, chan and senpai.
Yeah, like, 100%, and that's what she's doing. And I'm like, okay, I actually kind of get this now.
Which I totally did in high school.
I do think we should learn from our past cringe, but I don't think that people should, hate themselves for their past cringe. It's just something that you look back on.
Yeah, unless you kidnapped and raped a little girl in high school.
Yeah, but I mean... But this is Charlotte's cringe.
Yeah.
So.
She's...
Because in the book, I'm just going, man, dude, you're being kind of hard on her. But when I actually get to hear it...
I like Charlotte in this movie more than I like Charlotte in the 97 movie.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that.
Okay.
Before we move on, obviously, the pedophilia is insinuated. Yeah. It's not played down. It's just insinuated instead of shown. It's not explicit.
And a lady combing her hair. I like the old movies where the combing was implied.
Other than that, like, how is it as an adaptation?
I think both of these fail in exactly one aspect, which I will fix with my version, which is how they don't portray Humbert as an unreliable narrator. They just portray the events from his journal as the film.
Okay.
So it's all of this stuff happened objectively from his perspective.
Well, I mean, and who's to say it just didn't happen in the novel that way, and you just prefer to read it as an unreliable narrator?
Well, there's like little things in the novel where he starts getting details wrong, or he starts correcting himself or going, oh, but I also remembered this detail, or, oh, she totally came on to me, which I guess you could say.
I do that in real life, and I'm not an unreliable narrator.
I thought you were.
No.
Oh, okay.
I generally consider myself a pretty honest person.
Everything's just too objective from the Humber view, especially the 1997. Again, children can't consent, but that idea that she was coming on to him is something that I never actually bought into from the story.
I completely forgot to mention... This movie was written by Vladimir Nabokov. He wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
Which...
But it does adapt literally what happens in the novel to the screen.
Or literally what Humbert says happens in the novel.
To the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Minus that, like, weird binge where he is living with a woman his own age when he's looking for Lolita. I can never remember that character's name because she's so unimportant.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, she's like this drunk divorcee woman who's like insane.
Uh-huh.
And she fires off his gun once. And he's just like traveling the countryside with her because he's like lost the trail of Lolita, and the guy who kidnapped her, he like doesn't know what to do. So now he's just kind of bouncing around, and then by sheer coincidence gets a clue and then a letter from Lolita, and he abandons her.
That's not ringing any bells at all.
At 100% happened. It's just
I'm not doubting you. I just...
It's just some... And the woman's mother even writes Humbert going, oh, you and my daughter are such a... You guys should get married.
Sounds like they probably made the good decision to leave that out of the movie.
Wow, this is graphic.
Moving on to Lolita 1997, which was directed by Adrian Lin.
Wow, this is graphic.
Who also directed Fatal Attraction and Jacob's Ladder.
Those are very good movies.
I haven't seen either.
Yeah.
Written by Stephen Schiff, who wrote True Crime.
Also a personal favorite, damn.
Budget, $62 million, box office of $1.1 million. However, this isn't to say that it went into theaters and just completely failed. They had at a heart, one, it had an inflated budget for a lot of reasons, including reshoots due to weather. And two, they couldn't get it into theaters and they ended up having to sell it to Showtime for $4 million to give it a TV release. And then later, after it was already on Showtime and people had already seen it on TV, then it had a limited release in theaters. So I don't think you should just look at the budget and the box office and write the movie off based on that purely, because there's a lot of information you need to know that explains kind of that.
I still think the investors would not be happy.
No, I mean, yeah. Obviously they wouldn't. And honestly, I don't think this movie would have done that well, even if it had a normal theatrical release.
I think it might have done better, but I don't know.
Sure, yeah, I'm sure it would have done a little better than $1 million.
$62 million. Like, I'm absolutely baffled at that. There are superhero films made today that have that budget.
Yep. And they make, you know, like six times what their budget is.
And this was 1997, $62 million.
Yeah, and it was done by a production studio called, like, Pathé. This is a very small studio. It wasn't like Columbia or Warner Brothers or New Line.
It wasn't one of the ones that could take the hit.
Yeah, exactly. So Lin's film is more overt, and I would say explicit.
Wow, this is graphic.
With many of the novel's darker elements, especially compared to the Kubrick film, which was just suggestive and used an innuendo.
And a lady combing her hair? I like the old movies where the combing was implied.
As I said, the film had difficulty finding an American distributor, and it premiered in Europe before it came out in the United States. Eventually it was picked up by Showtime, and then eventually had a limited theatrical release afterwards. This is a quote from Schiff. What's his name? Stephen Schiff, the screenwriter. Right from the beginning, it was clear to us all that this movie was not a remake of Kubrick's film. Rather, we went out to make a new adaptation of a very great novel. Some of the filmmakers involved actually looked upon Kubrick's version of a kind of what not to do. I had somewhat fonder memories of it than that, but I had not seen it in maybe 15 years, and I did not allow myself to go back to it again. So he wouldn't let himself rewatch the original movie because he wanted to keep it clearing out of his mind.
Yeah, while he wanted to work with the novel as a basis.
Yeah.
Okay. Which I think if you're going to adapt a novel, that's probably what you should do.
No, that's good. And that reminds me of James Arnold Taylor, who plays Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Clone Wars TV series. Mm-hmm. He did not let himself watch Revenge of the Sith until they cut production on the Clone Wars, mm-hmm. because he wanted to keep himself in Obi-Wan's pre-Order 66 mind frame.
Yeah.
And he was afraid if he watched Episode 3, then that would influence his performance as Obi-Wan in Clone Wars. Probably anybody who cares about the Lolita movies is not going to care about that. So let's move on.
I mean, I do.
Yeah.
So. Okay. I'm the exception.
Yeah. General discussion, Lolita 1997. Go ahead.
Why is Jeremy Irons the perfect pedophile?
I mean,
he plays one really well.
He plays the Predator. I mean, he's Scar. He's, Ozymandias.
He's Alfred. I'm just going to pretend that version of Alfred groomed that version of Bruce Wayne now.
That's why he had to leave England. They found out what he did. And he's like, I'll be going to America. Just like Humbert.
He's sitting there with Batman going, did I ever tell you about my time with Dolores Hayes? And Bruce is all like, well, who's that? Is that the Riddler?
If I was Humbert, I would not be telling Bruce Wayne about it.
Especially, just saying. Especially not the version of Batman that will break you.
Yeah.
No. That version of Batman has a Gatling gun strapped to his car.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
I thought he did a very good job as Humbert.
It was a very strong performance.
I think, I just think Jeremy Irons is typically a top-tier actor.
I agree.
Listening to him talk in this movie reminded me of listening to the audiobook.
Yep.
So, I mean, same dude.
And this movie includes a lot more quotes and actual dialogue from the novel than the original does.
I liked the internal dialogue.
Yep. And they open on him saying the fire of my loins line, so you know right from the beginning what you're in for. I should have turned it off there.
I like that they included the childhood trauma that set everything into motion.
I didn't like how they presented it, though, because they didn't present it as, like, here's the psychological explanation for why he is the way he is. They present it as, like, oh, it's his long-lost love, and now whatever he does in his adult life, he's pursuing that love that he never had. They portrayed it very romantically, and I thought that was pretty gross.
I was hoping that was just because he was telling us that. That was like from the Humbert viewpoint.
Yeah, I didn't, like you said, I took everything from both of these movies very literally.
Yeah.
But maybe it was. Who knows?
I'm hoping that was the intention.
Yeah, but it came off very gross to me.
Well, he's a very gross person.
Yeah.
I'm having I've been trying to come up with a new dream cast, and replacing him is very hard.
Cumberbatch.
He would do pretty good. Yeah. I would like it to be an actual British person.
Yeah.
Henry Cavill.
He's British.
Yeah. But he won't have to talk with his fake Superman accent anymore. I'll be just be British.
I need to watch the Sherlock Holmes movie he's in.
Quilty in this one isn't
creepy as hell.
Is very good at being creepy. He's not as overtly there. He's mentioned a lot.
He's like the Moriarty or the Sauron of this adaptation, where he's like this ominous presence that's always there but never like directly involved in the action.
The one scene in this movie that came close to what I wanted of like Humbert not maybe being all there and not being reliable is when his first interaction with Quilty, when he's like sitting out on the porch and like he'll say something, Humbert will go, excuse me, and then he'll say something else that sounds similar, that is, like, did he really hear that?
Yeah.
Is he just so nervous about what he's trying to do that he's distorting what's going on?
I took that as him being paranoid and mishearing what Quilty was saying.
Yeah.
Or Quilty was intentionally fucking with him.
I took it as what you said, as he's mishearing everything, super nervous. And
yeah.
And that's a lot closer to what I want from an adaptation, is I wanted a little bit more of that, but I really like that scene. Honestly, that might be my favorite scene in the movie. At least it wasn't when she popped the retainer out.
Which time?
The first time, when she's on top of him.
The first time she does it is when she's eating out of the fridge.
The first time when they're together, when she's on top of him and pops it out.
She does it like 7 times.
And I'm sitting there going, I wish she could have, because I started laughing, but it's that like really bad nervous laughter where I'm going, no fucking way. They really wanted to remind you of what was going on.
I almost didn't finish this movie. I had to pause it constantly and then pace around the room 5 or 6 times, just having like a fit.
I honestly really like this movie, but that scene got to me.
I think this is the most triggered I've ever been by any movie. I think it's probably the worst movie watching experience I've ever had in my life. For me personally, in terms of my viewing and my reaction, it's not the worst quality film I've ever seen, but it's the
worst. But you didn't enjoy it, so.
It's the worst time I've ever had watching a movie. I've never seen anything that triggers me even anywhere close as hard as this movie triggers me.
What's another character? We discussed Humbert pretty well. Lolita, what did you think of Dolores Hayes?
I couldn't handle her at all.
Yeah.
The actress was 15 years old. She's barely a year older than my daughter, who is also a redhead. And
I didn't think of that.
She's basically the same age as my daughter. They're both redheads, and she's open mouth kissing this 40-year-old man in this movie.
This is why you don't let your daughter act in Hollywood movies.
This is why I'm never watching this movie or reading this book ever again, because I'm not here to judge people who like this movie, except for maybe you. I might judge you a little bit.
Judge me a little bit.
But I cannot handle it.
This movie molested me as a child. I had no chance but to end up this way.
I'm very happy they used an adult double for the actual legitimate sex scenes between the teenage child and the 40-whatever-year-old man. The actual, you see them having sex. No, oh, fade to black, nope. It's like, oh, she's reading the comics. That's nice. Wait, is she sitting in his lap? Why are they rocking back and forth? Ah. What? Oh. And I wonder why this movie couldn't find a distribution.
My insides hurt.
Yeah.
But what did you think of her as an actress?
She's a very talented actress.
Yeah. I liked how immature she acted, because she's 15.
Yeah.
She's acting like a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you know what? This movie did a very good job of reminding you of what actually is fucking going on.
But it even, like, sexualizes her more than the book does in some ways. Like, the scene where he goes out into the garden and meets her. Adrienne Lynn is like, you know what would make this even better? Let's have her reading under a sprinkler in a white dress so you can see everything under that dress. The retainer. We've talked about the retainer.
That's what got to me.
Yeah, the retainer is bad.
Apparently even Daniel has his limits where I had to go, no.
I've said the open mouth kissing with the 15-year-old girl triggered me very hard. Her crawling around on the floor like a dog, mm-hmm. and then having a whole conversation with Quilty when she's like on her knees, like at his feet as a dog,
mm-hmm.
was also very bad. The banana, they were not subtle at all with the banana, including the teeth marks on the banana. I don't like this movie.
What about Fat Hayes?
She, in terms of performance, I think she was probably the weakest one. I don't think she was necessarily bad.
For me, she got, like, that cringe factor that I was talking about earlier across very well.
Yeah, and that's good for her because, you know, Melanie Griffith, star of...
Roar!
I'm going to go ahead and tell you ahead of time. I rank this movie below...
Roar!
And... They both star the same actress.
That's funny.
Neither are bad because of her, but I just think it's funny that she's in both movies.
I did think like that disdain that Humbert feels, and not just because she's a grown woman. Because I do think that he doesn't like her because she's a grown woman, but I also think that there was like a personality thing about her.
Yeah.
And I think this movie actually gets that across better than the book.
No, I agree, because he's a very...
cultured.
He's like, let's have a drink and read a book by the fire, and she's a let's go dancing type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the, let's take a trip to Europe, mon chérie. I don't even know.
And he's like, Europe, been there, done that.
Yeah.
I just want to read some French poetry and have a scotch.
Yeah. I still can't get over his fucking bow tie. I love that. Is there any characters we're missing?
I mean, there are other, but I think it's really those four that are
those
really
are the big ones.
Those are the ones that are worth discussing.
I like... Okay, they both had, like, those scenes at the school.
Yeah.
Do you have a preference on how they handled, like, the school for either movie?
I just... In the 97 movie, I just thought it was so perplexing. Like... It seems so strange to me, where I was almost like on Humbert's side of the table with the woman and the priest, like badgering him that he has to be like sexually open with his daughter. And I'm like, this took place in the 1940s. It's just hard for me to picture that actually happening. That's like something that like very progressive parents today still have trouble openly discussing sex with their children.
That always takes me aback too. Even in the book, I'm sitting there like, again, I'm sitting there going, is he saying that they said this stuff? But in the movie, they're sitting right there.
They say it.
Saying these things, and you're like, okay. But I could understand, like, a prep school going, well, you need to be open to your daughter dating. She's 15 years old.
And that something...
If you shelter her too much, she's gonna not know how to interact with people.
And also, like, a lot of these prep schools for girls were preparing them to be wives and mothers, not have careers.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that it would encourage them to date.
But the sexualization is even...
Strange.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I like that in the original movie that it's Claire Quilty in disguise.
In both movies, when he goes to see her when she's pregnant, she's like pissed that he didn't figure out that it was Quilty.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I wouldn't have figured it out either. Because every time Quilty pops up, he's so oblivious to him. Like, he never registers Quilty in either movie, anytime he meets him. Until it's right there at the end. He's like, Dad, it's Quilty, you dumbass. And he's like, who?
What about, okay, the pregnant scene. Which movie do you think did the pregnant scene better?
The original.
The original?
I like the original more. But that was maybe just because I'm less disgusted with James Mason Humbert than I am with Jeremy Irons Humbert.
I'm more disgusted with Jeremy Irons Humbert, but I like that about the movie.
Well, also James Mason Humbert gives her the deed to the house.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Irons doesn't.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of a big deal. Like, in the original, he gives her like all of his money plus the deed to the house. The only asset he doesn't give her is the car, and that's only because he needs it to go and murder Quilty.
What about the killing of Quilty in the 97 with the flopping around penis and the...
I'm not offended by a penis in the movie.
Yeah.
And they're not flopping around that much, but I prefer it to the Kubrick movie. Maybe I would like the Kubrick one more if it was shorter and didn't involve,
like,
so much talking.
Like 10% shorter.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, I think the violence in the 97 one was a nice break from the long Tarantino-esque dialogue of that movie.
I actually like that. The violence is very, what's the word? God dang.
It's kind
of poignant.
Yeah.
Like, it emphasizes... Let's call a spade. Humbert's a violent person, even if he wasn't a murderer before. Like, raping a child is a violent act.
It's like when Michio Yuki says, "Oh, they know me as the serial kidnapper, but now I've changed. I'm a murderer."
Yeah. You were always a murderer.
Yeah, but it was always preceded by kidnapping. Now I'm just a murderer.
Now I just bomb things and say I'm using your ideology for it. Which is the better adaptation? Brian.
I guess the 97 one is. I think in terms of, like, plot beats, they're both...
About the same.
In terms of...
what's actually happening, or like portraying the actual situation for what it is, I think 97 does it better.
Yes. For me, how it feels as an adaptation is it romanticizes things a little too much compared to the book. One being Annabelle Lee, and then also this is similar to what you said, like Dolores just like straight jumps up on top of him and starts making out with him, and you obviously in the book you don't know if that happens or not. Like you said, he says that she comes on to him, but
I wasn't even her first lover.
Yeah, which they also incorporate that into this one.
Yeah.
And again, I said this in the book episode, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. But to a
pedophile justifying his actions, it does.
He's rationalizing.
It's there's a dude I watch who actually did what he did was he did reviews or commentary over Chris Hansen's To Catch a Predator, and he has this like long dialogue at one point going on, what is with pedophiles and anal sex, because it comes up a lot, and he starts going, well, maybe it's because like there's a certain level of responsibility people feel when it comes to taking someone's virginity as opposed to butt stuff, and he goes on like trying to figure out what it is about, and I'm just like, maybe they're just perverts, dude, and that's what they want.
Yeah.
But that's what's going on, and when I'm reading Lolita, I'm like, I see honest reflection of pedophile justification. And as a dude who's worked with sex offenders for the past 7 years, I see that shit a lot.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense.
Oh my God, are you Stephen King?
No, I'm Dean Koontz.
Oh.
Anyway, Kings and Koontzes.
Okay, so what's your king for the original movie?
The bathtub scene. I really like that scene.
Mine is Tarkin. Tarkin has a cameo.
Yeah.
Peter Cushing is in the movie that they're watching at the drive-in.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Koontz for the original movie.
I'm kind of reaching for Koontz because I actually liked both of these movies. But I did find the slapstick a little silly. Just for what the story is. And then there's, hey, we're going to play around with this bed here. Oh, don't wake up the girl.
Yeah.
It's like Three Stooges asking a story about pedophilia.
Yeah, when they're trying to fix the cot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was funny when the guy's like, we did it, sir.
Yeah.
She's asleep, you dumbass.
Like, it was funny, but...
Yeah, it felt out of place.
But it felt strange to me.
I don't know that I could really give, like, a fair Koontz.
Give an unfair Koontz. This is your Koontz. If your Koontz is this story just...
It doesn't work for me.
It doesn't work for you. That's fine. That's a legitimate opinion to have.
And I'm wondering... I haven't seen Leon the Professional since I was in high school. And I've only seen it once. I watched it when I was in high school. I'm wondering if I'm going to like it on a rewatch.
Maybe we should watch it together.
I actually thought we could do it as a bonus episode.
That would be a bad bonus episode. King for the remake. What are we doing?
The little old lady across the street.
Uh-huh.
And my Koontz is every scene with Jeremy Irons and Dominique Swain. Just every scene they're both in gave me the absolute shivers. And it took me like six sittings to get through this movie. One, because I kept having to pause it and do laps around the house going, no, 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 no. And two, because I could not let anybody else in my house
see
or hear anything in this movie. It was very hard to find time to watch this.
God, I think my king is just Jeremy Irons. I think he does a great job in this movie.
It's one of, if not his best performances.
And
that's including The Lion King. Be prepared.
He was looking over at Simba and Nala going, give me a minute.
Nala. How would you like to be queen of the pride?
That's fucked up. Koontz. Again, I'm stretching for Koontz. The budget. There's no reason this movie had to cost $62 million.
I mean, they didn't make it cost that much because they thought it would be funny to fail.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if we just totally lost millions of dollars on this movie?
I guess there's some parts where it's like it's dragging a bit.
Yeah, this one I think they're both a little long.
They're both a little long.
I don't feel like this one dragged as much as the Kubrick movie, but I think that's just because Kubrick
he likes to drag.
Yeah,
that's like one of his signatures.
Yeah,
he's like, I will make it be. You could give him the most fast paced action script, and he'd be like, I will make the bullets move one pace at a time.
And I get criticized for not being the biggest Quentin Tarantino fan, but it's because like he just has these long, long dialogue scenes. It's just talking and talking and talking. I'm not even the biggest action movie person, but maybe it's just how they write dialogue for me personally.
Rankings.
I did them pretty poorly, but
let me see your rankings
based on my enjoyment. I have Lolita at the bottom, and I have 97 at the bottom, and 62 4 from the bottom. I struggled with whether to put it below
Roar
or above
Roar.
Ultimately, I had to decide. It's based on my enjoyment, and I'd rather watch
Roar
again than Lolita again. Part of me wanted to keep
Roar
on the bottom because animals legitimately died.
But this made you legitimately feel icky.
Yeah, if you told me I had to sit through this with Beck or Emma, like I would claw my eyeballs out.
New stretch goal for Patreon.
That will never. I will be done with the podcast before that happens. I don't care how much
money. $10,000 a month.
Nope. That's good. Yeah.
They're my number one and two. Kidding.
I mean, yeah. I kind of expected them to be in that range for you.
No, I didn't like it as much as The Ring, Pet Sematary, The Mist, Dog Soldiers. They are pretty high, though.
Yeah, I assume they're in your top half.
62 is going to be... God, I think I like Drink Hazanbon more, even with the incest.
That's good.
I'm going to put it above The Blob 1958, the original.
Lolita 1962 is your new number 23. And by the way, I had a stroke of genius, or other people might say, duh, Ryan, obvious. The link to our rankings in the Google Drive is now in the show notes, so you can just click the description on this episode and click the link to our rankings instead of having to join our Discord and go that way. Although you should still join our Discord.
Yeah, we will accept any memes.
Yes.
Well, almost any memes.
Almost any memes.
I got banned from Lolita memes.
Yeah. Yeah. Just trying to be real with you.
And I think I'm going to put the remake right below Hellraiser. So above Rink Hazanbon.
Your new number 9.
No,
Oh, the
new, remake,
the
yeah.
new Hellraiser.
Yeah, it's not as high as you thought it was going to be, but
I emotionally prepared myself for it to be your number one.
Still relatively high. I just think that I enjoyed the movie, but these I'll go out of my way to watch again. I might go out of my way to watch 1997 again down the road, or if I'm like, hey, you guys want to see something fucked up?
Yeah.
You know, fucked that I might indeed. Do, but like Cocaine Bear is a legitimate good time.
Yeah.
And while I think this is a well-made movie, I'm like, could I just sit and watch 2.5 hours of it any given day? No.
In terms of production, like, I mean, all the performances, Melanie Griffith, she wasn't bad, but like everybody else, Jeremy Irons, Swain and Frank Langella, they're all amazing. Mm-hmm. The cinematography is really great. Music is fine. Like, there's lots of pretty shots. Technically, this movie was very well made.
Yeah.
Of course, it was also made from a fancy pants French production studio.
And that makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah.
Pate. It was made from the Big Hayes' production company.
You know my fantasy, Oh, I want to have a French production company and make it live in Lowe's room.
That's so fucked up.
Homework.
You go first.
What modern director would you have adapt Lolita and how? Miyazaki. And just...
As an animated film?
Sure.
Okay.
Do anything you want. Make this movie palatable to you. I want to see what happens.
It's just going to be Spirited Away again, but the dragon will be older.
Sure. I'll probably like that better than the other ones.
Okay. So I talked about how I like the idea of Humbert as like an unreliable narrator. I like the like little things that make it seem like maybe he's not all there. My director of choice is Christopher Nolan. And I want the movie directed via the style of a Memento, an Inception, or, and this is strange finding out what I did tonight, Jacob's Ladder, which is also a very, like, what's actually going on movie. So a lot of the, and I would even say I don't want there to be an explicit sex scene. I want shit to be implied via really weird visuals. There's a scene in Silent Hill 2 where you walk into a room and it's completely flesh-colored, and there's just these pistons shooting in and out of holes in the wall. And it happens when you find this woman who's very heavily implied to have been raped by her father and brother in the story. So, oh, symbolism. So that's the kind of shit I want. That's my Lolita, is Christopher Nolan directing Lolita via the frame of Jacob's Ladder.
Chris Nolan would not probably have been even in my top 20 guesses.
Let me hear some of your guesses.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I had some like other fancy, like artsy fartsy directors that do similar films and like the quote unquote elevated horror. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was thinking, is you would make it like a horror movie, mm-hmm. but like from the director of Hereditary or something like that. But I was like, well, who's someone a little bit more mainstream who could direct something like that? Chris Nolan.
I've only seen Inception in the Batman movie, so... But I guess Inception kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
With what you were saying.
And one of his first movies, Memento, is about a dude with short-term memory. He has to tattoo or write down things all over his body to remind himself of what to do and where to go.
That sucks.
And it turns out, like, at the end of the movie, that people have been manipulating him the whole time to trick him into doing things.
I like movies with elves.
Peter Jackson direct Lolita, but with elves. I mean,
but no, but like his horror B movies, not like Lord of the Rings.
Not like Lord of the Rings.
Do it a la The Frighteners.
Yeah, that also sounds like it would be entertaining. Maybe too slapsticky, but I think it'd be funny.
Yeah, and Michael J. Fox is Humbert Humbert.
God, who Michael J. Fox would be a good Humbert Humbert? I don't know who I would cast as Humbert Humbert. I like your idea for Cumberpatch.
Yeah.
I would actually like them to cast somebody who's not conventionally attractive, but tries to sell themselves as attractive.
I was thinking Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's not bad. Jeremy Irons was a little old, but he wasn't, like, ugly old.
No, he's an attractive man.
Yeah.
I actually think he's more attractive older.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's more attractive.
He's very wine when it comes to his attractiveness.
Mm-hmm. I like the Silver Fox Jeremy Irons. Just go, like, completely off the wall and just cast, like, Will Ferrell.
Danny DeVito.
And John C. Reilly can be Claire Quilty.
And they talk about how hot they are. Because that's the kind of shit that I kind of want in my version of the story is, like, part of it is you're seeing the distortions of that he's creating, and part of it is you're seeing the reality of what actually is.
Oh, you know what would be good. Or wouldn't be good, but you might like.
Yeah.
So, a la Kick-Ass, have Nicolas Cage as Humbert Humbert.
And that's also not bad.
Have Chloe Grace Moretz as Lolita.
Also pretty good.
She's too old now, but...
But back then.
Yeah. Although, what I would prefer, like, honestly... If I had to be in charge of a new adaptation, I would have an adult that could play a younger...
I would get, like, a young-looking 19, 20-year-old.
Yeah, I would not have a 15-year-old girl playing this role.
I would also, in my ideal version, because I've thought about this, she wouldn't be sexualized at all until you're in the clear Humbert distortion portions of the movie.
How would you signify when that is? If Red is in the scene, then we know Humbert is a little off.
Or apparently is. That's why I want Christopher Nolan or someone along those lines to direct the movie. Is the top still spinning? You know, that kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
But that's my idea for a Lolita movie, and I need to get just famous enough to pitch it.
All right. Question for the listeners. Which do you prefer and why? Reach out to us on our socials and let us know. For further reading, fuck if I know, Daniel.
Apparently Leon the Professional with your dad.
Yeah, if it's Lolita for dads.
This might surprise you. I don't know that many movies about pedophiles.
I think we're every piece of media I know of about pedophiles we're covering in the next month or two.
Yeah.
Moo.
Moo. Yeah.
Which it's a much smaller part of Moo compared to Lolita. But yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
Okay, upcoming on the Horror of Babylon. Next week we are covering Moo by Osamu Tezuka, and then our next episode on July 9th is Salem's Lot by Stephen King, and our next two bonus Thursday bonus episodes will be on June 29th and July 6th. We are reviewing The Toxic Avenger and Yoko Ono's Fly. Thank you to our patrons, Abigail, the First Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and...
Logan,
the Full Metal patron. And thank you to Forestman Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall, Morgantown, West Virginia, and the Mall Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Say hello to Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas, and stay tuned for our socials. And thank you, Daniel, for watching those Lolita movies and recording with me tonight.
I think I should be thanking you.
Yeah, I watched both.
Yeah.
I really, really thought about not finishing the 97 one, but I did. I got through it.
If real life had, like, trophy unlocks, I'd give you one.
Yeah.
Watch Lolita.
Pervert unlock. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned for our socials and stay scary.
Stay scary.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share, and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher, and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the horrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and all other major podcast apps. Stay scary.
Roar! Roar!